Know the Source on One Radio Network. Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. This is Patrick Timpone, October 17. It's 2018, by the way, just in case you're lost, and it's the Real World of Money. It would be a Wednesday. And Andrew Goss is here. He's a good friend of about 25 years, and he's a currency historian. He's written a couple books, working on a third, and we take a look at all the different things around the world in the financial arena and take a look at them. And I bring a lot of news things here to me here. And then we find out whether it's fake news, whether it's whether it matters to us, or whether we should just dig into it more to see if it's going to affect our health and our wealth and our well-being someday, like our wealth, because then the value of the dollars. So that's kind of what we do. And Andrew doesn't study for the show because I never tell him what we're going to talk about. Good morning.
Good morning.
Never tell what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, and we never know.
And we never know. But we have got some good emails, too. If you'd like to get in on the show with an email, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. I know nobody uses the phone anymore. It's either text or email. But you can still remember how to push the button. 888-663-6386. 888-663-6386. Thought we'd start with this whole Saudi Arabia thing. We don't normally just kind of do politics just for politics, because you go down that black hole and, you know, you end up, whatever.
Are you want my comment on that? Adnan Khashoggi.
Khashoggi. Now, Khashoggi's the
Adnan Khashoggi.
So what's the first name relevance?
This guy's uncle.
Whose guy's uncle?
The dead journalist.
Oh, the dead journalist has an uncle.
Named Adnan.
And who's Adnan?
Don't you have that, like, Google thing?
Tell us.
Or DuckDuckGo.
So what he's talking about, in case you're lost, is there's a journalist that has been critical of this new head dude. I think he's a young guy who came in a year ago at the kingdom of the Saudi Arabia, and he was going to do reforms and let ladies drive and all this stuff. And turns out then, I guess, about 6 months ago, we had the story where he gathered up about 150 of the richest dudes in Saudi Arabia, right? Put them in a big fancy hotel and said, we'll let you out if you give us money. So that was, it's kind of when you're head of the kingdom, that's what you do. So he's a piece of work, whatever he is. Now and they say that this fellow went into an embassy and never came out.
Yep.
And that's what this whole story is about, Khashoggi. And Donald Trump says, well, we got to get to the bottom of this. And if they really killed this dude, well, then there's going to be trouble afoot. So you have something. Who's his uncle?
Yeah, his uncle was Adnan Khashoggi.
Who's uncle? I'm confused.
Okay, the dead journalist. Oh, yeah. The presumed dead journalist.
Well, I think they figured out that he's been cut up
like they
did up in Fargo. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So many links. I can't even.
Well, see, I was going to go back and do the whole oil thing and the history of Saudi Arabia and kind of lay the groundwork. But what are you seeing now? What are you hearing?
Well, just essentially that Adnan Khashoggi, the arms dealer, was implicated in the Iran-Contra affair. You remember that?
Whoa.
The arms for hostage exchange.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, Adnan, and then it's the uncle of the other Khashoggi who was Fargo'd.
Very good.
Is that correct?
Fargo'd, yes.
Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. And this guy is still around. His uncle is still around.
No, he's passed on last year. But his wealth, shall we say, has disappeared.
Oh, yeah, that'll happen over there.
Yeah.
That'll happen over there.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is real strange. The United States has had this hate-love relationship with Saudi Arabia for a long time, right?
Right.
And you tell us a story about Henry Kissinger. What did Henry do and when?
Well, he went over there basically during the oil embargo in
73?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And offered them a deal they couldn't refuse.
Oh, one of those.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like my Uncle Tony used to do.
Yeah, it's a nice deli you got here. Be shame if somebody threw a brick through the window. Maybe you need some glass insurance.
That's what old Hank did, huh?
Yeah, that's what he did. Mm. Yeah, be a shame if Marines like, oh, you're great kingdom. What, wouldn't it be awful if like a war broke out here? It would be awful, awful.
So you've told us then, Henry Kissinger said that as long as you guys keep selling oil for dollars.
Correct.
And keep all your buddies around the Middle East who you have.
Keep in line.
Who you smoke weird things with in the middle of the night and whatever else you do. Keep them in line too. Everybody's going to be fine. And we'll take care of you. We'll protect you. We'll sell you airplanes and stuff so you can have your own little wars. And that's been the deal, right?
That's been the deal,
been
yes.
Been the deal. So that's
obscene bargain. And the other thing is, of course, it's your kingdom. Mm-hmm. So you do what you want in your kingdom. Mm-hmm. If you want to stop women from driving.
It's okay by us, man.
Yeah, we're not going to interfere. So you're not going to hear any human rights violations. So.
That's why they've...
Yeah. They do whatever they want.
Yeah. So was it also part of the deal, Andrew Goss, a currency historian, Man About Town, that when we give them all these dollars for oil, that then they then buy our treasury bonds as well?
Yes, correct. That's of course been our number one export for many years, United States debt, which has to be a topic of discussion today because it is it's reaching a critical point.
Yeah, I've seen some numbers here. Yeah, we'll talk about it. So let's talk about, though, so Saudi Arabia. So the idea, and it still is to this day, and it's gone on since the Carter days or whatever.
Yes.
It's just been the deal. This is
the deal, yeah.
This is the deal, and the deal gets passed on to different presidents.
Correct.
Because people who put the presidents in power.
they're the ones taking benefit of the deal.
Because they're the Earl dudes and the dollar dudes.
The Seven Sisters, yes.
The Seven Sisters, and they are Seven Sisters.
Yeah, the big
Mary,
oil.
Joyce,
yeah, right,
Jeannie.
The big oil companies.
They're the Seven Sisters.
Correct.
And they would be part of this meme we call the boys, right?
Oh, yes, indubitably. Indubitably, yes. Yeah, they are in the seats of power, and they stay there regardless. Presidents come, presidents go, and they continue to thrive in that environment.
So the boys and the Seven Sisters and the bankers, they must have some real pull when it comes to appointing
everybody,
the military on down, right? The Joint Chiefs of Staff and that whole thing.
Yeah, BP, Gulf Oil,
the old CIA thing, they get in there, and the deep state, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Right. Pretty neat picture when you think about it. Yeah.
Right, the links between the CIA and the others very well. I mean, it's so well established. But if you really need to check it out, just check it out. The Seven Sisters. They rule the world.
So what's happening now? I mean, could this be... Could this really be an Achilles heel kind of thing if this whole Saudi Arabia thing explodes with people around the world? The United States has to do stuff they don't want to do, like not sell them all this stuff. The president has said, you know, we got a lot of deals on the table here. We don't want to put guys out of work.
Supposedly
billions of arms deals. And
100 billion.
Yeah, is it 100 billion? Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm not too thrilled about selling our weaponry to other nations.
Well, we're the biggest, aren't we the biggest, the United States, biggest exporters of weapons in the world, aren't we?
Israel.
Oh, Israel. Mm. Mm-hmm. All right. So, but the whole idea of selling oil for dollars, that thing is...
So important.
It's just not important any longer.
Well, it isn't. Well, here's what's made it less important. We are the number one oil producer in the world now. What do you think of that?
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
So the idea where Saddam is saying he was going to sell oil for whatever gold and
euro,
and an oil bourse and all this stuff, and
correct,
those days are kind of over.
They're not as important anymore as they were in the days of Jimmy Carter. You know, we couldn't ramp up our oil production in time. In fact, it was simply a matter of why should we bother drilling for oil or trying to explore and find oil here in the U.S. when the Middle East is willing to send it to us at a fraction of what it would cost us to find it.
Yeah, what are we doing here?
That's kind of why all the manufacturing jobs went to China. because, you know, we didn't have a vision, enough of a vision for the future to realize that if we rely on these folks for our number one strategic item, oil, then, well, then they're kind of the masters of things. And they proved it during the oil embargo, the crisis, the oil crisis.
Gas lines and the whole thing.
Which was simply a dollar crisis. You know, when President Nixon closed the gold window, he effectively said, we're not paying you in a fixed supply commodity anymore. So you're giving us oil, and we're giving you these pieces of paper that prior to now, you could trade the paper for dollars, real gold
before
dollars.
Before 73, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, and now that we've closed the gold window, all you can do with this money is invest it. And essentially, the oil sheiks said, we're not going to do that.
Yeah,
we want gold.
30 pieces of paper, dude.
They give us gold, yeah. And so they said, hey, if this is unbacked, then we're not going to take it anymore. And that was the basis for the oil embargo.
That's why the ships were outside New York City waiting around as they were negotiating. Well, what broke that deal? Because they certainly didn't go back to gold. What kind of deal did the United States make?
Well, the deal that we discussed.
To bring in the ships.
Yeah, we're going to let you have these treasury bonds that are going to pay you interest. We'll give you full access to academia and to all of our technical expertise.
Ew.
And then we're going to partner up with you in this Arab American oil company, Aramco.
Aramco.
Yeah, or Aramco, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it became essentially the dominant oil player in the entire world. So not only are we going to help you develop your oil and your oil fields and your oil industry, and obviously take a little cut, but we're going to help you defend your kingdom. If anybody comes here to mess with you.
Ooh, we got these planes.
Oh, wow. Marines.
We
and
got
F-16s.
Nukes. Man, we got it all.
Yeah.
We got it all.
That's right. We'll send them all in there and defend your nation. So you get our mercenary police force that will make sure that no one challenges your sovereignty. You get all this wonderful U.S. debt, treasury bonds and treasury bills that will pay you interest. And, of course, your people, your students, will have access to our universities.
Oh, and boy. So yeah, they made a real deal with the devil,
deal.
Right?
Yeah,
a
they did.
A deal with
yeah.
the devil.
Yeah.
So that was the idea. If we're not going to exchange these pieces of paper with pictures of dead presidents on them for gold, let's get our treasuries, you know,
correct,
and we'll make it a good deal, and
yep.
And we're going to pay you interest, and mm-hmm. we've never defaulted, and we're not going to default, so,
right.
Hey.
And we are the preeminent currency on the world.
Yeah, reserve currency, so why?
And once you get a mountain of dollars, you can buy anything you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in fact, Adnan Khashoggi did buy himself this gigantic yacht.
A yacht? Oh, you mean the Iran-Contra guy?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Hey, which he later sold to Donald Trump.
Oh, good. Oh, geez. No kid. Don't say that.
I'm sorry.
Come on, they're going to be talking about that for 6 months and you bring that kind of stuff up.
Yeah.
Adam Khashoggi sold his yacht to Donald Trump?
That is correct.
Wait a minute. The uncle or the dude that was cut up was Fargo'd? You can't even make this stuff
no,
up.
No, you cannot. The connections are amazing.
Jeez.
And I've noticed even the media.
Where do you get all this stuff? What kind of sources do you get? I don't read this stuff.
Well, there's a great book.
Anyway, I
knew all about Adnan Khashoggi. Huh? And when they kept pronouncing his name, have you noticed they tried to pronounce it any other way but Khashoggi? And,
oh, I had noticed that. Cause I
yeah. Huh? Yeah. And I'm like, wait a minute. Why do I know that name?
Oh, I see.
And I do know that name. That's Adnan's. And then I discovered, the family connections there that his grandfather was the personal physician to the king, and his nephew is this stringer reporter that knows where all the bodies are buried, shall we?
Yeah.
Well, including his own, maybe,
his own,
because
yeah.
It was...
Yeah, he was really getting feisty over this new guy. Do you know his name, the new dude in Saudi Arabia? I don't know.
No,
I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
But
MBS is his name. Yeah,
MBS is what they call him.
That's what they. Mortgage, the guy who rounded them all up.
Oh, mortgage-backed securities.
Yeah, he might be. Yeah.
Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone. It's the real world of money. It's fun to look at geopolitics, and if you dig in, you see all these loose strings. Like if you start tearing them, you know the sweater falls apart. And
mm-hmm.
so you know, there's no telling where this thing, this karmic. time bomb is going to go with Saudi Arabia.
Well, this is true.
Yeah, yeah. You just don't know. Yeah.
And, you know, as much as we relied on them before, I can see us cutting them loose now.
Oh, you mean just saying, who cares with you guys, you know?
Yeah, well, 10, 15 years ago, if they would have captured one of their citizens from an embassy and cut them up into little pieces and
yeah.
made spam out of them, whatever they do, no one would have blinked an eye. Well, that's internal Saudi affair. We're out, yeah. you know, Saudi citizen.
But about the oil, Andrew, I've been reading some stories where there are these oil experts, you know, who knows if it's fake news, but mm-hmm. they're saying there's really not as much long position in all this fracking stuff as people say, that this is a short-term kind of thing.
Well, I don't know about all that.
Okay.
You know, if you remember the Lukoil, the Russian deep drilling, you remember that whole thing, Yukos Oil?
Oh, where Putin put the guy in prison, this guy?
Yeah, that it took his company
yeah.
and spread it out.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, well, what they discovered that no matter where you drill, if you drill deep enough, you will hit oil.
Where, here?
Yeah. Anywhere on the globe.
Oh, anywhere. You just dig deep enough.
You just drill, and
get the gooey stuff or this whole fracking thing?
Well,
that's different, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in theory, you get gooey stuff if you go deep enough?
Yeah, you'll get oil. It's harder to refine, but you will get oil if mm-hmm. you go deep enough.
You don't get that sweet crude.
Sweet
crude. That's what they get in the
yeah.
Middle East, right?
That's right.
And yeah, get that good stuff, yeah.
Kind of rose to the top. So this, you know, deep oil drilling means that there's a heck of a lot more oil than we ever imagined. You know, the world spins, right?
I think it does. Yesterday, I think it was really spinning a lot, I felt.
Yeah,
I was feeling the spin.
And that oil is a byproduct of that spinning.
And that spinning, yeah, it's not going to end, really.
Really?
So
unless the world stops spinning.
So the idea of a peak oil was all a big... Remember that came out about 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Peak oil, so. It's going to die any day soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, now they're drilling down 9,000-10,000 feet.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, yeah. So, the deeper they drill, the more they find.
Sure. And I would think, because we have man-made global warming, it's just going to thin out the oil, be easy to bring up.
Hilarious.
Just a thought. Just a thought. Yeah. Mm. Boy, geopolitics, what a trip. Man, you just can't even imagine the conundrum that Mr. Trump has himself in. From all sides, you know, from whether it's now the pharmaceuticals are all got their panties in wad over this and that with him. And then the bankers, of course, they don't like him. And now he's out there saying the Fed is really the biggest problem. Check this out. Okay, this is what he said. Here's a little clip. This was on CBS.
My biggest threat is the Fed, because the Fed is raising rates too fast. And it's independent, so I don't speak to him, but I'm not happy with what he's doing because it's going too fast. Because you looked at the last inflation numbers, they're very low.
But you put him there. I mean,
I did.
You think about Janet Yellen,
you know,
and she was so dovish.
Can I be honest? Yeah. I'm not blaming anybody. I put him there. And maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong, but
what
I put
if he
him
gets
there.
It wrong?
I put a couple of other people there that I'm not so happy with too. But
if
for the most part, I'm very happy with people.
What does she mean? What if he gets it wrong? Get what wrong?
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
I don't even understand the question.
Okay, so if the chairman of the Fed,
who are these people that interview him anyway?
Yeah. Jeez. Well, they certainly don't know. They think the Fed is well anyway.
Okay. Yeah. I got it.
But obviously, the president can be influenced or affected by the activities of the Federal Reserve.
Because they raise interest rates is all they can do, right?
Correct.
The rates that the banks are charged, correct?
Correct.
Okay, that's called the federal funds rate.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And the more they raise interest rates, the harder it is for people, entities, companies, countries to borrow money.
To borrow money. Mm-hmm. And they borrow money to generally buy stocks.
And buy things.
Buy things, right. Yeah. So last week we took the week off because I was on a road trip with Doodle, and the stock market went down like 800 points. I thought it was something we did or something.
Yeah, well, you weren't on the air.
It was a problem.
Patrick's gone. And
I was on my little laptop, said, whoops, man, I don't think we should take off very often.
Yeah, and I think it was 1,300 points.
What was it? Yeah.
It was over 2 days.
What was that deal? But that was short-lived right so far, right? And now it's been bouncing around. And
do you remember like the plunge protection team?
Oh, yeah. Tell folks who these dudes are.
The President's Working Group on Capital Markets. They're the ones that respond to issues such as this, and it's a public-private partnership. And so whenever there is an event like this, they storm in with their positive press and their deep pockets, and they buy the MMI, the Major Market Index futures, on the Chicago Exchange, thereby driving up the price of the underlying stocks in New York. So they're kind of proactive rather than reactive. We set these guys up under the Reagan administration, and they're the ones that kind of put the guardrails in, you know, to support the mechanism. They'll let it run within a certain range, but then when the plunge seems imminent, they'll rush in and apply the leverage or the pressure wherever they need to apply it in order to reverse the market's trend. Richard Whitney famously did it in the panic of 07, I think it was, or the crash of 29, where he just went out there after forming a pool with other prominent financiers and bought stocks in the face of everyone selling them.
Good for him.
So, yeah, this
is
a
good day.
Right, it was a great day.
So where does this plunge protection team get their dollars, their digital things dollars?
Well, do you realize that the banks that own the Federal Reserve make enormous amounts of money?
Well, I was told that, but I thought it was just fake news.
So, you know, as part of their deal, they have to support a particular market. So there is no question that they come into action just when they need to be.
Oh, J.P. Morgan and Gold in My Slacks and HSBC and these dudes, Citi and Wells.
Each of them has a segment that they're responsible for. And, you know, the Morgan crowd is famously charged with the precious metals market. So they're the ones
that's right. Yeah, they're the ones that go
short silver. Exactly. So you need to buy silver or gold, and if letting you buy it is going to drive the price up, then we're going to go short and sell it to you, and it's going to cost us an enormous amount of money, but that's just part of our deal, so we have to do it. Mm-hmm. And many others, of course, are responsible for different segments of the market, and when it starts to break down, they come running in and do their thing.
Oh, I see.
The Working Group on Financial Markets, Executive Order 12631, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How does a guy like you, who's a libertarian at heart, think about this idea of the manipulation of markets like this?
Well,
it's not very libertarian.
No, in fact, the anything but free markets is what we have. And when you have a Federal Reserve that artificially lowers interest rates, you remember when they drove rates all the way down to where they were nothing? And
yeah,
I said,
Actually, you know, below someplace.
Yeah, exactly. So the sub 4% 30-year mortgage was a manipulated mortgage, and this is why I was advising everyone to load up on it, man, because it's going to stop, and when it stops, it's going to be ugly,
which is where we are now. Now, so interest rates are going up on the federal funds, and that's moving the 30-year, right?
And then 3.3.
And the 10-year, then, isn't that what
3.1,
controls?
3.1,
That's what controls 30-year fixed mortgages, a 10-year?
Correct.
To 10-year note, okay.
And that's what gives us now a liquidity crunch.
Well, that was on my list.
It should be.
Okay, well, let's do a little Marshall first. You can have your sulfur and take your holesterol. And how is your blood pressure thing going?
Fabulous, thank you.
You're doing pretty good?
Oh, yeah.
Andy took this really cool herb called holesterol that's on the Pearlseum website. He's been playing around with the high blood pressure for a few years. And
Not anymore.
So I sent him a couple bottles, and you already burned through those and got some more, right?
Yeah, I got four more.
And it's just some kind of a crazy herbal combination from China. Very unique. It's not all that complicated.
No, holly leaf extract, hawthorn fruit extract, Dalkin seed extract, and a proprietary extract blend.
Proprietary.
So yeah, it's all it's all herbal though.
Uh huh. And it really works for you.
Works for me, yeah. and has lasting effects. Like, it's not like if I stop taking it, my blood pressure shoots back up.
So it's not like a 24-hour fix.
And no, then, you know,
So it's kind of, it must be doing some really good things at a deep level. I like that.
Yeah.
You know, it must be. I don't know for sure, but.
Nor do I, but yeah. How long have I been taking now? You gave it
to me
in
months,
the
right? Couple
summertime. Months. I guess it was June when my blood pressure was so high that, you know, the doctor.
We were concerned about Andy.
Yeah, no, it was like, oh my God, what's that number say? Let's get a new machine. I think it's broken. And then, you know, the cardiologist is, you need beta blocker.
Beta
you
blockers, need, baby.
Lipid. You need a
Lipitor.
Blood thinner.
Man, we're going to do it all. Go get you
here,
some rat poison.
Here's a script. They gave me like seven bottles of pills.
Oh, man. Which you never took.
No, I still have them, but they're like a trophy on the, you know, hanging on a rack in the wall.
Okay, so Andy's talking about a product, and it's the same people that sell the calcium mineral supplement that we use on our teeth and our face and internally called Pearlseum, but it's called Holestrol. So if you click on the little green thing where it says Pearlseum, you'll find Holestrol. And if you know somebody with some high blood pressure, you know, shoot them a couple bottles or take it yourself. And just an herbal thing. We don't make any claims that it's going to do this or that. It's not been analyzed by the FDA or anything, and they didn't say it does this or that. It's just herbs that have been known to help regulate blood sugar, and so that's what it's called, Holestrol. Recently, we asked Daniel Vitalis if taking pine pollen would dampen the body's own testosterone-building mechanism.
Yeah, some research has been done to see if pine pollen would have that kind of effect, because we see that with pharmaceutical testosterone supplementation. But what they found was you'd have to take the equivalent of about two bottles per day of our pine pollen extract to create that kind of an effect. So it's really safe for people at any age, and we found it to be really safe for both men and women. Today, a lot of women are also looking at testosterone replacement therapy. And I think before anybody looks to the pharmaceutical industry for anti-aging therapies, for anabolic therapies, they should probably look to nature first, and they should probably look to SirThrival's pine pollen products. And not just our pine pollen gold extract, but also our pine pollen pure potency, which contains Eleuthero root and also stinging nettle root, which helps to free testosterone that's already in the body, but has been bound up. It helps to free that in the blood.
That's my favorite, the 4Ps. Really love this product. Been taking it for years. And right now, through November 7th, you can get Pine Pollen, boys and girls, 10% off promo code ONERADIO. The promo code ONERADIO.
Oh, forget that part. Forget that part. It's not a promo code right now. It's just Pine Pollen. Sorry. That's an ancient commercial.
Need to update those guys, but yeah, whatever. Pine Pollen, then Elk Velvet, and then they have Shug and Rishi, and the flagship colostrum, and the new one, the Herbal Bitters product, and the vitamin K2. It's a great company, very high quality goods. SirThrival, you just click an order and try out some of the products. They're all in Myron glass, man. They're really the bomb. We're hearing more and more about some of the challenges that could be out there with the electromagnetic fields, which include Wi-Fi, and of course cell phone towers, and then smart meters, and just stuff, you know, even compact fluorescent bulbs puts out some dirty electricity in your walls and can affect the blood sugar. That the science is there. So there's a lot of things that we just kind of didn't plan on, you know, a couple hundred years ago when what's-his-face Tesla and whoever, the Edison dude, start doing the electricity thing, and it all went kind of downhill from there. But come on, are we going to give up our electric coffee maker? Just probably not. So it's here to stay. 5G is coming, and we don't know all the things that it could possibly do to the cells in the body, but there are some very clever people out there that have been looking at this for many years. One of the technologies is called Blue Shield EMF protection, and our friend Brandon Amalani, who is the Shen Blossom guy, we also promote his products, which are amazing. He has things like all kinds of things from goji and shizandra and a 50-year-old ginseng, really cool. So look at shizandra, the Shen Blossom link. But the Blue Shield is also Brandon's company. He's the only distributor for this Australia found technology, and it's actually been about 25 years. So this is not something, and they figured out a way technology-wise how to help the body to get stronger and to actually affect the cells in the body to make them more resistant and just kind of more immune, if you will. Maybe immune's not the right word, but just stand up better to these electromagnetic fields. And they use them in chickens and farms and for the animals, so the placebo thing is not there. And this stuff really works. And the mortality rate and the rate that they lay eggs and they get sick less. And it's really pretty cool. If it works with chickens, it's got to work with us too. And it does. And you can put one of these in your home. It's called the Cube. Goes out about 90 yards. You just plug it in, and every 30 seconds it changes Andy would understand this, it's geeky code, so the body doesn't get used to it. And that's pretty interesting technology. So that's changing it every 30 seconds. So your body, you know, the body will always go back and change and stop and just stop doing things if you just keep doing the same thing, which is why you want to maybe cut out some of your nutrients there on the seventh day. The Lord rested it. That's what that comes from. You break the cycle. Otherwise, the body just, you know, it doesn't work as well. So that's cool. So you can use promo code One Radio. Check this out. You may like one. We have it. And they also have a little credit card type thing that I carry with me on my trip. And actually, you just charge it up through a USB. And I just put that right on the bed next to me in the little modal, because they all have Wi-Fi, and I don't know, I slept fine, and I don't know if I would have slept fine without it, but hey, you just do what you can out here on planet Earth. We don't know what sticks for sure, but we give it our best shot. It's Blue Shield, right on the front page, oneradionetwork.com. Hello? I think I'll do that again. Blue Shield, oneradionetwork.com.
From the Hill Country, in Texas, thanks, broadcasting worldwide, this is oneradionetwork.com.
Okay, here we are, Andrew Goss. If you'd like to be on the show with Andrew and ask him a question, it is Patrick at oneradionetwork.com or 888-663-6386, email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. Another big headline this morning was about the liquidity crisis glooms as the global bond curve nears Rubicon level. Sounds like a great headline. I don't really understand it, except I understand Rubicon, but the liquidity of the curve and how that ties in with liquidity. Why don't you translate this for us? Talk to us like we're a young child. Or
credit market peak. It's a credit market peak.
Credit market peak. And that correct means in English?
That we've borrowed all that we can borrow without expanding the supply of how much is available.
Oh, I like that. We've borrowed all that we can borrow. We meaning
a world. A world awash with debt.
Private and corporate.
Corporate, and government.
Everybody.
Individual.
Everybody's just under.
Yeah.
Everybody's under.
Yeah.
How do we get this way?
Well, because
can we just buy more stuff than we need?
The Dorito solution. Do you remember those? Every week I'd do a Dorito bag with Ben Bernanke's face on it saying, crunch all you want, we'll make more. And the Fed was expanding the money supply at a rate that was just alarming. And so there was more than enough money for everybody to borrow and do with what they wish.
Mm-hmm.
But over the last year, the Fed has been withdrawing money from circulation, keeping the dollar extremely strong, and forcing the rest of the countries of the world to live within their means. And the Chinese in particular.
Well, that's a whole nother story. We got a few stories on China that we'll get to. So that's what Donald Trump is talking about with increasing the interest rates. That's part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly they've been selling off some of this.
Not selling off. As they mature, not reinvesting the money.
Oh, they just burn them up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we owe the Fed $100 billion. Here's your $100 billion. Great. We extinguished the bond. Mm-hmm. We extinguished the money. Typically,
but it'd be great to have a kind of a product,
yeah, right,
that you could just, you know, get your $100 billion for it, and then and then you could just burn it and rather than keep it.
Well, you know, that's the responsible administration of a monetary system. As I revisited my chapter on Massachusetts, where this concept was invented, that's what we can give to the world, the concept of state issued scrip currency. tax anticipation notes. So we expect that in October we're going to collect $1 billion in taxes. So we're just going to issue $1 billion in notes here in July. Mm-hmm. And when the money comes in October, we'll just extinguish the notes.
Okay, let's play that out, because that's really kind of interesting. Let's say we're in Texas, and Texas would do what? They would issue, say,
$1 billion
of tax anticipation notes. They'd get on their computer or their, yep, or their whatever, you know, their printer, and they, yeah, just print tax anticipation notes. And they would use these, and what would they do with them?
They would buy things with
buy
them.
Things like
pay
buy.
Things. And they would say to the citizenry and on the note,
yeah,
that you can use this note to pay your taxes due.
So, but you have to pay for the note.
Of course.
Okay. So let's see. So if somebody wanted to build a highway, what would they do?
They would issue the notes, pay the workers, the companies with them.
Yeah.
And then when their tax payments started rolling in months later, they would simply use those tax payments to redeem the notes.
To take them out of circulation.
Correct. That's what they're supposed to do.
So that's kind of interesting. So you've just created a loop where nobody gets hurt.
And no interest is due.
And no interest is hurt. That's pretty interesting.
No one benefits except the people that take it and the people that issue it. That's it. There's no middleman, no third, fourth player. But then the secondary market developed. It was this: hey, I notice you just built a road for the state,
mm-hmm,
and they just paid you with $1 billion in tax anticipation notes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that much tax anticipation.
Yeah.
So we'll buy them from you for 99 cents, 95 cents, 92 cents, the discount rate, a slight discount to face, and you'll have liquid cash ready now. And so then these brokerage firms developed that would do this sort of business. They would buy these bills at a discount to their face value, and then either resell them to people who anticipated taxes or use them themselves to pay taxes, or in recent years create secondary and tertiary instruments based on these things, these fictitious.
So that's called the secondary market, and that developed when?
Well, goodness, the first issuance of these notes was Massachusetts Bay Colony in 1694, I think. No, 1720.
Some clever people started doing
exactly
that.
Right after. I mean, just immediately.
Hmm.
In fact, Alexander Hamilton famously bought up as many of these bills and notes that he could prior to announcing the Resumption Act, which was that the government, the federal government, would buy up all of the state's debts incurred during the Revolutionary War. So people were willing to sell them for fractions of their face value. And he and his wealthy friends made enormous amounts of money.
So is that the same general idea that was laid out when they start doing treasury bonds as well?
Yeah. National debt is a national blessing. Yeah.
So the idea that you would take these bonds and they would use these to pay taxes?
Well, the tax anticipation notes that were issued to pay off the bonds.
Yeah.
You know, this loop, if you will, is all within a closed system. And this is the beauty of a central bank. You know, the crypto people tell us, well, we have no central bank, so we don't have anyone manipulating the value of the market.
Right.
Without a central bank, you have the roller coaster, because when everyone's selling, the price plunges. When everyone's buying, the price rises. And there's no one to stand in the middle and lean against the wind, lean against the market. If everyone's selling, they buy. If everyone's buying, they sell. That's what the central bank does. They can be a huge help or an enormous impediment. And Mr. Trump is finding them to be an enormous impediment.
Well,
Jimmy Carter found them to be,
yeah,
an enormous impediment.
Well, let's
Barack Obama presided over a Federal Reserve that was accommodative.
Yeah.
The whole time he was president, lowering rates, lowering rates, lowering rates, lowering rates, lowering rates, lowering rates, which meant encouraging borrowing, encouraging spending, stimulating the economy. So everyone was borrowing, and this is the peak.
But it didn't stimulate the economy.
Well, without it, as I the case I made then, we would have crashed and burned into an economic depression.
So why, if all this money was flowing in during O's time, was the GDP so punky and the stock market wasn't doing what it's doing now? What happened to all that money?
Well, the regulatory environment made it virtually impossible for innovation, one, which this president has cut. He's taken down 12 new regulations for every one put in place.
No wonder they don't like this guy, right?
Yeah.
He just doesn't stop.
I think today's regulation day, in fact. This is an enormous benefit. You can't quite put your finger on it, but how much money is saved from not regulating? So that's one separate and distinct item. And Mr. Obama did, it seems, if you were trying to choke an engine or stop something from growing, you would have, he couldn't, I don't want to disparage him because, he did the best he could. But it seems if you were trying to slow an economy down, you couldn't have used more methods than the Obama administration employed.
Well, he succeeded. I mean, the GDP was 1%.
Yeah, 1%. And we were told.
And look at unemployment and look at welfare.
I mean, and we were told it was the new paradigm. Get used to it. Wow. There's nothing can be done about it. It is what it is. This is what it's going to be. Might as well just get used to it. And now all I hear about is a four handle on GDP. 4.1, 4.6, 4.8. It's absolutely going to be a blowout because this president has removed the impediments to growth.
So what would be the motive of those who were controlling Obama, say if you call them the global eye, right? Mm-hmm. The globalist.
Five-finger word.
What's that? What's the five-finger?
Greed.
So you mean it's just more of them?
Oh my gosh!
I see. They get more for creek.
Oh look!
Oh, I see. Yeah, of course. Yeah, you create enormous. All this money, and where does it go?
Some of it has to go into our pockets.
And they slurp it up.
And they did. And that spurious quote that runs around—that's allegedly Jefferson, right? If the American people ever allow banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, and then, so he never said that, but. The theme of it is correct.
Well, say the whole quote because it's quite telling.
If the American people, just so we know, we don't know who said this. I can assure you, after 30 years of research, that Jefferson did not say it, but it is. If the American people ever allow banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until they wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
Boy, that'll give you chills, man.
Because it's so accurate. But he did say, I believe banking institutions are more dangerous than standing armies. That he did say. And he said, quote, the issuing power should be taken from the banks and given to the people to whom it rightly belongs. So, and this was all about the First Bank of the United States war, where Alexander Hamilton, who despised the idea of the unwashed masses making any decisions at all, he wanted a ruling elite, and they should be given control of the banking system for profit, and the U.S. could have a little piece of the profit, but the majority of the profit would go into these moneyed individuals' hands through the manipulation and use of central banking and fractional reserve lending. So that's what they did. And that has been the system in place since, well, on and off since 1792. I mean, literally, the day of the Constitution was signed, the Hamilton crew was already drafting plans for the First Bank of the United States.
So you are painting a picture with this fiat currency system. If you really had a bunch of good guys there that had a big vision, that wanted to help the world and really help everybody,
they could
do it perfectly.
Yeah.
You could do it perfectly.
I would say that the fractional reserve banking and a fiat monetary system have the same power as a nuclear reactor. So it can either be used for good or it can be used for bad.
Yeah.
That's kind of and that's where we are. And our central banking system has been so abused over the last 110 years that, well,
Yeah.
It's put us in a position that's untenable.
And you can understand it with human nature, kind of like, I guess, cocaine. You give this kind of high, this juice to people with power and create money and do stuff, and you know it's not going to end well.
They want more.
It's just not going to end well. It's just human nature.
Yeah.
It's just, that's what humanoids do for a living. Now, BlackRock is one of the hugest
hedge funds
in the world, right?
Yes.
Well, did you see some of the outflows of the markets and the equity markets on these guys?
Yeah.
They're bailing out of here.
What
do they know?
Well,
I mean, what do they know?
That we're heading for a liquidity crunch that's going to make the 2008 liquidity crunch look like a picnic.
Really? That's what they know, huh?
Yeah.
A liquidity crunch is going to make 2008 look like a picnic?
Correct.
We're going to have these Lehman moments all over again?
Only it's going to be far worse than just housing.
Everything, huh?
Housing is just the tip of the iceberg, but the corporate debt. And the the forced selling in China. So you have like $60 billion. Is that number right? Hold on.
You mean this debt that they found that they had that nobody knew they had?
Forgive me. $600 billion. $641 billion.
This new stuff they found that...
No.
No?
This is all companies that have pledged their stock against loans.
Companies that have pledged
their corporate stock
against loans
to the company. And this is Chinese companies primarily.
Wow.
So now the Chinese stock market is down 30% this year. Hmm. And so have you ever saw the movie Trading Places? Margin call, gentlemen. Hmm. So your stock that you pledged for your loan isn't worth what you owe us. And before it sinks any lower, we, the banks, are going to sell this stock into the open market. Beijing put in a rule now that you must ask us before you sell the stock. And the wave of that sort of activity is, well, this is the real problem. And it's not just China. It's India. It's Italy. It's Spain. And... you know, as we talked about during this whole crisis, recovery, when I said, well, you know, worldwide dollar-denominated debt has doubled since the crisis. You know, now we owe twice as much. And this really is the root of the problem. Everyone papered over the issue. Some people paid down their debt, but Russia primarily. But for the most part, people use this additional debt to paper over whatever problems might have erupted in the 2007 crisis.
And they're really doing it in China. If you look at a chart of their total debt to GDP, which is the ratio that everybody uses, it's going straight up to the right, folks. It's just going like from 1995, just 45 degrees. And this report was out this morning when it comes to estimating China's outstanding debt. Been a long-standing confusion about the real number, with most putting the debt GDP at around 250%.
But that doesn't include local government.
While the IIF last year calculated China's debt load as high as up 300% GDP. Mm. Now China's watchers can add another minus 40% of the debt GDP to the total because according to S&P, China's local governments have accumulated 40 trillion yuan, $5.8 trillion or even more of off-balance sheet debt.
Yeah.
Suggesting the already record surge in defaults is set to accelerate further. So
LGFV.
What are they doing now?
So imagine instead of going to Citigroup and we did them here, dirt bonds, the state of Texas or the city of Austin would fund some project. I don't know, pick your...
Whatever. Whatever it might be. 200 bond.
Private industry.
Oh.
Austin wants to get the second campus for Amazon.
Okay.
So they offer to build it and pay for it, loan the money.
Like that, yeah.
So it's in their economic terms, the money managers call them LG, local government, FV, financing vehicles.
Oh, good.
We say, we're going to give you bond authority to issue however many bonds to build this campus and bring these jobs here to Austin. Well, this has been the standard product for financing these Chinese companies for the last decade.
For, you mean so cities and counties
correct
and regions in China,
right?
They'll do these bonds to build stuff.
Well, they've done.
Okay,
the city to nowhere, the city that
right.
no one in
just to keep people working.
Correct.
Right? Ah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And now they've just reached the point of ridiculous.
It's beyond ridiculous.
Yeah, beyond ridiculous. Because this this is $5 trillion that was hidden.
Yeah, they didn't even know about this. 5.8.
They pretended they didn't know about
it. Oh, I see.
But they knew about it. It was well known. You could track the financing for any big project.
Yeah.
Who put the money up? Where'd the money come from?
But as long as China... Let me see if I understand. As
okay,
long,
well, if they
go ahead.
If they expand their money supply,
right, that's where I was going.
Then they can pay everything off. But what will happen? The yuan will plunge. Now, I believe this week that you're going to see the president of the United States, Donald Trump, by the way, in case
you didn't know.
He's going to declare China a currency manipulator.
That's coming.
They're between a rock and a hard place. If they monetize this $5 trillion plus, then they're going to be accused of manipulating their currency to make their exports cheaper. So
Let's walk through that. So let's say that China wanted to make this 5.8 trillion go away.
Yeah.
They would create 5.8 trillion more yuan.
Yuan.
That's in dollar figures, you know, whatever trillions of yuan. And do what with it? Pay off the things.
Yeah, or make it available for borrowing.
And then manipulate the currency.
Well, that would manipulate the currency.
That would make it go down in value because of all the new stuff.
Correct.
But they'll just systematically manipulate it upwards or just hold it? What would they do?
Well, think of their benefit.
Oh, they would go ahead and let it drop.
Correct.
Well, they would should drop because they're creating more yuan.
That's right.
So how could he, the president, call him a manipulator?
Because that's
what
they're doing.
Does.
Well,
our currency
is strong,
what?
And we could easily manipulate our currency and allow it to fall in order to meet our obligations and make our position more competitive. So how many more caterpillars would we export? How much more? How many more soybeans
would we
sell if the dollar was cheaper?
So the Fed could create a $10 trillion like they did since 2008.
Absolutely.
And just lower the value of the dollar, and then
our caterpillar
tractors cost less.
That's right.
So this is what China is doing, and that's currency manipulation.
The way the president
But China looks at it like they're saving their ass, excuse me.
Right. No, well, that,
I mean, you know
that's
what
they're doing.
Yeah.
And the way that the world economic system works, if everyone refrains from saving their butt, then the system will work. But if everyone thinks only about themselves and brings their currency, which is this is why they have those muckety-muck meetings, you know, the G20.
Davos and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Let's get together so that we all understand we're all working together and we're working. But if any one of us goes rogue and decides, well, we're just going to reduce the value of our currency to make our position more tenable, well, then that kind of the whole system teeters. And if everybody does it, well, then, you know, all bets are off. Now, no one trusts anyone else, and it's just an absolute financial mess.
It's just a mess. And it's a geopolitical mess. And, you know, and then all you can do is focus on what kind of shoes Melania is wearing. And
right. Nobody, well, then it's,
nobody cares about it.
So, hey, the queen, the prince is having a baby. Oh, who cares? Let's focus on what's going to affect all of us. Well, I get that that's going to affect the royal family, but what affects all of us, we all have this one thing in common, money. That's the one thing that we all rely on. It's not Republican money. It's not Democrat money. It's not black money. It's not white money. It's green. It's just a green thing. And we all, regardless of our affiliation, store our life savings, our ability to function in these notes, money, whatever you want to call it. Because I mean, that's... Right, remember the 200 economists, they got together in a conference in South America and couldn't agree.
Yeah, what money was.
What money?
I don't know. What do you think money is, George?
Well, I don't know. What is it? Well, does it count these? Does it include these?
Jeez, does it count this one?
Yeah.
So isn't that, it's no coincidence that both, mostly Mnuchin, part of the NAFTA thing, the new, or what do they call it, the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement, YMC, whatever.
Yeah, whatever it is. The new NAFTA.
Yeah, the new NAFTA has currency
protections
yeah. in there, which they didn't before. Write,
that's right, because no
tell
one ever
tell folks what this is. This is very interesting. They didn't do this before.
No, everyone imagined that you would keep your currency as strong as you possibly could in your national interests, right? And they would never imagine that a country would purposely devalue its currency.
Wouldn't do that.
Why would you? It's insane. But that's exactly what companies and countries have done. And so into these trade agreements are written these provisions that you won't do this. You won't manipulate your currency to make your trade position more...
But in a fiat system, and you're always trying to go against the wind, as you say, lead against the wind and keep things from blowing up like they did in the Lehman moment 10 years ago, you're always trying to keep the thing floating. So aren't you always manipulating your currency because you're creating more dollars out of thin air or yuan out of thin air? Aren't you always doing
that? Now you have to do it within specific bands that are written into your trade agreement.
But then, I see. Okay, so that's what so they start messing with the peso or doing stuff with the loonie. Then,
as long as they stay within the terms of their agreement. You know, it can be as low as 6 or as high as 8. There's your band. And, you know, you can manipulate it within that band. But if you exceed that, well, then that's a problem and you're in default of the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So building these into the system will protect, allegedly, the opposing nation or nations against this sort of currency manipulation.
Andrew Goss and Patrick Timpone, it is the Real World of Money. Andrew buys and sells gold coins for a living. That's what you do for a living.
So exciting.
What a job. I mean, you could have, I don't know.
You could have been a bond salesman.
You could have opened up a chain of Denny's restaurants or something. Or Sears. No, you don't want to do Sears because they're not happy.
Not so much.
Did you see what Trump said about Sears?
No.
Did you hear? He goes, well, they used to be a really good company. He said, when I was a kid, they were the good, great company. And they were just poorly run over the last 20 years. And look at them now. Yeah.
I agree.
He's probably right.
No, he is right.
Gee.
When I was a kid, about the same time as Donald,
yep.
Excuse me, President Trump.
President Trump, please.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Anyway. Only millennium calls him Donald.
Yeah, that's right. And, if I broke a Craftsman wrench, I would just march down to my local Sears store with my broken wrench.
You bet.
And they would hand me a new one, and I would go home. If I bought a Kenmore brand appliance and it broke, Sears would come and fix it. I didn't have to find a reliable serviceman. Sears would come and fix it. And this brand recognition, when you knew when you bought something at Sears, that Sears was going to stand behind it. And once they started hiding, no, we don't. We sold that to you, but we don't know anything about it. It's yours now.
No, we don't know about that.
Yeah, and once they started bringing in outside brands, and so then they could say, well, talk to them. That's got nothing to do with us. They lost their corporate identity. They diluted their brand. And I agree with President Trump. It's poorly, poorly run. They were so late to the market. Try to catch Amazon now with its automated warehouses and its distribution channels. Impossible. I don't care who you are. There is no competition. Even Walmart.
Yeah, I mean, Walmart's trying to do the whole Amazon thing. It's not going to happen. Not going to happen.
Nope.
You might as well just let it go and do something else.
Well, yeah, if you have a weight around your neck in the form of all this brick and mortar that you must sustain, while Amazon is pouring their profits or revenue into automation and warehouses and delivery and shipping. It's just an entirely different mode to market, and they're exploiting the hell out of it. I believe they're going to be the retailer. I can see a point where there's an antitrust action against
them. Well, I was just about to ask, as a libertarian at heart, do you think there's a place when somebody steps in and say, okay, Jeff, you're just really getting too big for your britches because this is not going to be good? As a libertarian, or how do you react to that?
Laissez-faire,
Laissez-faire means just go for it.
Leave it alone.
People like it, they're willing to pay, and
that's
blah, blah, blah. It.
It
works.
Yeah.
You employ a lot of people.
They become the biggest retailer in the world as a result of this, then let it happen.
Let it happen, huh? Do you see some of these new robots they're making? It's really spooky. I mean, it's just, these people look and act and move like like humans.
People, yeah, with a brain.
I mean, they jump up on boxes and stuff. Right. It's just fascinating, man. Right.
Whether their girlfriend or boyfriend is mad at them.
Doesn't matter, man.
If they owe the a bill next month.
Don't have to pee.
They don't think about any of it. They don't take breaks. They're constantly working. Wow. The automation of their distribution network has really put them at the forefront of the retail market. And they'll continue to take market share away from Sears and JCPenney. And the only thing that those stores have, especially in the apparel lines, which you may notice expanding, they're trying to say, well, you can't very well order that dress or those pants on Amazon because you need to try them on. You need to
see. So what does old Jeff do? Tell him what he does.
Yeah, he sets up little department stores, if you will, where you walk in there, try the thing on, and you like it, great, we'll order it for you. It'll be at your house tomorrow.
And also, I know on Amazon, you can try it on. And if you don't like it,
send it back.
And it's so spiffy the way they do it. I mean, you just print a label on your computer.
Yep.
You slap it on the box and drop it off at UPS or call
You don't even have to drop it. They'll pick it up.
They'll go pick it up. I mean, it's brilliant. This guy, man, the way they got this thing humming, I don't know. It's hard to see, like you say. What about this Alibaba thing in China? Is that the same principle, kind of Amazon Me Too thing?
Yeah, only the Chinese version. No,
really?
No, and the debt that they're burdened with, my goodness. So if you've bought into this emerging market nonsense, where you've invested in an exchange traded fund or some other type of a hedge fund that buys these foreign companies, these emerging market companies, hold on to your hat, or be prepared to really take a serious hit, because that's what's going to happen. The liquidity crunch is going to start overseas, and it's going to spread. You cannot stop it.
And what's it going to mean to our listeners who in this country? What's it going to mean for maybe the value of their dollar or housing or stuff that matters to them?
Here's the thing that bothers me the most. Okay. These bond funds, these exchange-traded funds, industries like BlackRock and others have sponsored these funds where you are putting your money in with the promise of instant liquidity. Here's a checkbook. You want your money back, you just write a check. Now, typically, when you buy a 5-year bond or a 10-year bond or a 30-year bond, I'll see you in 30 years. You bought this thing now, you're just going to collect the interest. Don't try to bring it back to us.
Like during the Jimmy Stewart movies, right?
There's your liquidity crunch. Yeah. So as folks say, oh my goodness, interest rates are rising, that means my bond fund is going to fall in value, so I'm going to sell, I'm going to redeem, redemption, I'm taking my money out. Now, the fund itself holds a 30-year obligation. And what are they going to do with it? You've now taken the money. They have to either sell it or pledge it to attempt to borrow against it. The dollar can't be in two places at the same time, although that's been what's happened for the last decade. And folks have gotten so comfortable with these exchange-traded funds and these, funding vehicles that allow them to participate in the long-term bond market, both corporate and government debt, while at the same time maintaining total liquidity. It's the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm.
It's having your cake and eat it,
and
too.
Eating it, too.
Yes. Yeah. So, but to be fair to new listeners, you're not a classic collapsitarian or a crashaholic person.
I haven't been.
There's many of them out there.
I haven't been.
Yeah, the Gerald Celentes and the Schiffs.
I have not been. And anyone who's listened to this show or other shows for 15...
It's going to crash. It's going to burn. You've never been there.
No.
You've never been there, as long as I've known you.
Except now.
Except now you're really thinking things are like really ugly.
As ugly as I've ever seen them
in 35
years. Really?
And you've been 35 years. So this is the real deal? We're going to do another Lehman on steroids?
We cannot continue and ignore it. It's not going to go away just by ignoring it.
Really?
No. We're at peak earnings. Mm-hmm. So there's no more growth in corporate earnings.
Wait. Peak earnings. Corporate could always do better and be more efficient and sell more stuff. Why
not
would you?
In the liquidity crunch.
Because they can't borrow.
There's not enough money. I mean, people have borrowed all that they can borrow.
I see. It's kind of like what's happening in housing.
Right.
Okay.
So we either have, we have one of two choices here. We, it's the very same. It's so funny. It's exactly the same in terms of choices as 2007, 2008. You're either going to allow everyone to go bust and settle up for around 30 cents on the dollar, or you're going to increase the supply of money. The Fed has to reverse its course and start another buying program. Don't know where it's going to be this time. I suggested student loan debt, certainly
$1.3 trillion, right?
Yeah, there are areas. And even the housing now, while it was in a nascent recovery, it's now starting to look very dangerous.
Right, they're talking like a cyclical, downturn. Yeah. So let's go in there right now on the housing. Yeah. Okay. So it's the idea that the affordability of these homes, there's people that want to buy stuff and move, but they can't afford the homes because of their salary, is that right?
Correct.
That's what's going on now. That's what's causing this cycle to start to turn backwards.
Correct.
Housing prices.
Yes.
Having to
the affordability index.
Yeah. So that's what's going on worldwide, or just United States, or you know, who
knows? Well, certainly the United States.
Right.
You know, the housing recovery wasn't built on solid footing.
It's called the U.S. Leading Home Price Index growth percentage-wise, and man, it is, it's going the other way.
Yeah.
It's going down 45%, right?
Yes, exactly.
What does that mean, that price index thing? Exactly. It just means the amount of homes available to people.
They take the, 150 metropolitan areas, and they look at the average gain and what it costs to buy, et cetera. We add it all together. Even in Silicon Valley. Over the last 5 years, housing prices have risen 100%. While in El Paso, Texas, it was 2% over 10 years. So it's been uneven, given that the conditions for the market depend upon that region's economy. So in places where things are booming, such as Silicon Valley, you get enormous price gains. And places like Mobile, Alabama, where there's no growth, you actually have seen negative. They're still losing money on their real estate in Mobile, Alabama. And in the middle of the country, and this is, again, over a decade, in North Carolina, in Arkansas, 10%, 5%, 15%. These are the growth rates over 10 years.
Are people moving there?
No. The rise in the value.
Oh, the rise in the value of the real estate, yeah. So if you were going to move somewhere now, you just had to go somewhere, or to our listeners saying, I just got to get out where I am, whatever, L.A. or something, where would you go?
Yeah, where would you go?
I don't know.
If you use RealtyTrack or any of the other big indicators, you're going to pick one of those cities and states where there hasn't been this sort of growth. Alabama was negative 4% over 10 years.
Yeah.
So that would be the place to move.
Well, I tell you what, I drove to Philadelphia last week, as you know, and I went through the southern portion, missed the Pennsylvania Turnpike because my GPS system didn't know I wanted to go on toll roads. That's another story. I can't believe I did that.
There's so many toll roads up here. Holy cow.
Well, yeah, but the Pennsylvania Turnpike is beautiful. I went back on it. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
80 miles an hour for 250 miles from Philadelphia towards Columbus.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't get to go on it because I was following this stupid GPS, and somebody had checked off the box saying,
Avoid
toll roads. So I went south. And it took me 2 extra hours, but I went through some of the most beautiful country I've ever seen. Have you been down there?
Oh, absolutely.
In Pennsylvania, that's southwest of Philly?
Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
Amish country.
There's lakes, and there's rivers, and there's mountains, and there's trees. Wide open spaces, but I tell you what, when it gets to be 20 below zero, you wouldn't want to be there. That's
no
problem,
actually,
you know?
Starting to feel it in my toes now.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, I'd live there in a heartbeat if we didn't get so cold.
If it had South Carolina weather.
Yeah, boy, it's beautiful country. Anyway, so I guess you could go there and buy a place probably pretty easily, down in Amish country. Well, man, this is OneRadioNetwork.com. We're talking with Andrew Goss. He's a currency historian, and he has two books, Secret World of Money and Uncle Sam Cooks the Books. He's here every Wednesday. We have 10 years of shows. Wow, 10 years. You could put those on your MP3 player and get an MBA. learn about this stuff, huh?
Maybe.
Yeah.